The next time you're on Interstate 80, stop in and see the folks at the Iowa 80 Truck Stop at Exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. They're always open and ready to serve you. Enjoy a sit-down meal at the Iowa 80 Kitchen or grab a bite from one of their 9 quick-serve restaurants. You'll love their clean restrooms, huge gift store, beautiful convenience store, and, of course, the Super Truck Showroom stocked with plenty of chrome, lights, and more. While you're there, don't forget to visit the Iowa 80 Trucking Museum next door. It's free. The entire team at the Iowa 80 is very excited to celebrate 60 years with you. They look forward to being your home away from home for another 60 years. Sending you a giant thank you from Iowa 80, the world's largest truck stop on I-80, exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. Iowa 80.
It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show from the Uniden America Studios. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, we are Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Here we are. We made it to a Monday.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe it. Where's this week gone? I mean, what?
And we apologize to all of our socialist Marxist listeners. Mm. We failed to recognize May Day last week.
Well, it's the thought that counts.
Yeah. I love this story.
Seinfeld's Jay Peterman scorns the woke culture for destroying comedy. We've lost our ability to be silly.
Yeah. Yeah. I just can't believe it.
He should imagine if he ran for political office.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. John O'Hurley, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You couldn't take him seriously.
Oh, it was just so great though. The storytelling. I remember. You know, it was just great. It was a great character. It really was.
Oh, it was just superb character.
It's, yeah.
You see him talk in a serious way. And by the way, he was successful even when he was doing that outside of acting.
Right. Right. Yeah.
He's had a number of businesses and been an investor, and has done very well for himself outside of acting.
Yeah.
But he's just, that's one of the greatest character roles ever.
Well, and the way that he was able to pull it off, too. I mean, taking that character and just running with it and all of its silliness, it was really great. Really great.
He was talking about some of the shows they couldn't do today. Apparently, in the bookstore, he talked about the native language of New Guinea, and he says that probably would get him in trouble today. They probably couldn't say that.
Yeah.
And then he talks about when, oh my gosh, that probably when he got into the conversation with the host, that probably they wouldn't have been able to run the episode where Kramer and Newman hired the homeless to run their rickshaw business.
Yeah. Oh, that would not. No. No. Yeah, that's not going to fly.
And you know, one of the homeless guys is, what's his name? Uncle Rico. From, I can't think of the name of the movie.
Mm.
Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, okay. All right.
You didn't know who Uncle Rico was when I first asked, did you?
I wasn't a big fan of Napoleon
Not
Dynamite.
Throwing the football. Oh, man. Yeah. Throwing the football thing. Because he was also in... One of his first acting roles was one of Val Kilmer's first movies, Real Genius.
Mm-hmm.
He was in, I can't think of the actor's name, but he was in that too. But yeah, he was one of the homeless guys in the rickshaw episode.
Yeah, you couldn't get that past the NBC censors today. I don't know what they can do on, Seinfeld was talking about how movie making is so different. And you and I have talked about that. We have friends that are in the business, and it's become, I think you have now more and more people talking in the media from inside Hollywood saying, yeah, it's not the same. You present an idea, and why not just do a comedy movie to be silly? You know, I mean, why not just have the same silly attitude that you've always had? Well, you can't. There's got to be a higher purpose. There's got to be something else. Tell us why this movie is important now. It's funny.
Well, they were talking about the outing.
Mm.
You know, not that there's anything wrong with it. Mm-hmm. Remember that episode?
Mm-hmm.
That might not be able to run, but then they made the point that it ended up winning the GLAAD Award, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, won their media award. That episode did, and the whole point was, yeah, but would it today?
Well, it's a great question, because our sensibilities have completely changed, and how far would you have to go? Because the balance on that was what? The balancer on that was the punchline, not which became a catchphrase.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
That was the balancer. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It's just it doesn't apply to us, Jerry and George. And it was so well done. So well done.
You would think, though, that the panic and the outrage of them even thinking that they were gay would supersede in today's sensitive environment.
Yeah.
Would supersede that. Not that there's anything wrong with it, because clearly the point that they were making is there was something wrong with it.
Right.
With their anger and passion and George, oh no, my parents, oh no.
Mm-hmm. Right. That they would be devastated and yeah. So, now there's no way to approach any of that anymore. Because what you're afraid of ultimately at, you know, in this case, NBC, you would be afraid of the boycotts, which would shut down the advertising, which would be,
well,
you'd be done.
You know what I love? The Native American groups that were petitioning and actually, I think, filed a lawsuit against the Washington Commanders to bring back the Redskins name.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like they were complaining. They said, we're filing these lawsuits because the white society is attempting to erase Native Americans from the culture.
Right.
I'm like, you and I said that years ago.
Right.
Because now the opposite is good. You're trying to erase Native American culture from everything.
Right.
From the white culture.
Right.
Where there's nothing culturally about Native Americans anymore. You're erasing us as if we didn't exist. Oh, you mean like the definition of women? Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. You know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at Motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6, and help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
You saw that transgender track runner won two women's events in the Sadie Schreiner. Transgender runner Sadie Schreiner won three women's events at the Liberty League Championship meet, Division III on Saturday. Schreiner from RIT won the 400 meters and the 200 meters. I said three women's events. There's only two there. Both times would have been last in the men's races at the meet.
Oh. Interesting how that always seems to be the case. You can't compete in your own field, then you go somewhere else.
It's just ridiculous. I just happened to see that one. But, yeah, Jay Peterman, he needs to run for some kind of political office just to see how many votes he'd get.
Yeah, I'd love it.
He could say stupid stuff, too. Vote for me because I'll do this.
And yeah.
In that way that he does it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And then, you know, Seinfeld making the rounds, and we mentioned late last week, Seinfeld, you know, still talking about the far left and wokeness.
Well, and that you know, there's no way around it, and again, the doors are shutting in the process there in Hollywood, and so you can't make the movies that should be made. You know, you think about some of the all-time great comedies in terms of movies, and they weren't all massive box offices, but they kind of lived on, and it's been the case especially since streaming has really taken off, that you don't make it just for the box office. You make it for the life of the movie, of what it can make, what it can generate as a whole in terms of the revenue. And you just shut that down. I remember Jamie Foxx being on Rogan several years ago, talking about certain comedy movies that just can't be made and should be made. You know, and you just can't do that anymore. You're going to be shut down. It's got to have this message and only this message. And you're talking about some of the most creative minds out there, some of the funniest writers and comedians and actors to be able to pull it off. They're reviving the Naked Gun movies with Liam Neeson. We'll see.
Yeah, that would be. I
would love to see him pull it off. If you can pull off that kind of silliness, but you need the writers, and you also need, again, the green light from Hollywood to say, yeah, no, we're okay with releasing this, and you know, we're just going to let it be silly and absurd.
Well, what I laughed about over the weekend, and I wonder how much of it was a backlash. Not all of it was, because some conservatives didn't like it, but the pounding that Seinfeld's new movie has gotten,
mm-hmm.
Pop-Tart, which the premise is ridiculous, and again, it's not based on the actual truth of the Pop-Tart. They right. take a lot of liberties, yeah, and they brought. Yeah. But it was funny because I was talking to a couple of people, and we were looking at some of the reviews, and some from people we know. It's like, this movie just, like, passionate about it, and it's like,
lighten up,
and it's like, but it's Seinfeld, it's about the creation of a fictionalized version of creation of the Pop-Tart.
Right.
It's almost animation. It's supposed to be stupid and silly. This movie is just stupid and silly. That's
the whole idea.
The whole idea. I haven't seen the movie, but when I was talking to a few friends, I said, what I expect out of this movie is like, did you ever see UHF with Weird Al?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Michael Richards on it.
Mm-hmm.
He was great.
Yeah.
That had to be an offshoot of his Friday's role when he was
on
Friday.
I think it was. I always, in the back of my mind, thought it was, yeah.
But it was supposed to be completely and totally horrible and childish. That was why you laughed at it.
Right. It's supposed to be absurd.
Yeah. And I said, when I see the Seinfeld movie, I'm expecting nothing except stupid, ridiculous jokes
right.
that will make me laugh because Seinfeld or one of the other comedians are saying it, and except for what's her name, she's been panned universally, and it what's her name, the woman
Amy Schumer
she yeah. has been pounded. It's like, It was a great movie, but Amy Schumer, it's like, okay, maybe I'll fall in line with that one. But if she gave a good performance, I would say it. But I mean, what's a good performance in that kind of movie?
Well,
it could be the dumbest thing ever.
I think there's a couple of things. I think a lot of people were anticipating a comedic version of the real story behind Pop-Tarts. And maybe when they saw it, they thought, well, this is just silliness and it doesn't have a purpose. Actually, it does. It's comedy. It's supposed to make you laugh. And if you didn't laugh, okay. The thing about comedic movies, it's hard to pull it off. It's hard to write lines one after the other over and over again and make each one of them punch. And it just, you know, you got to do the setup. Then you have to have the actors pull it off and everything else. To have a silly premise. You know, I mean, ultimately, the movie that would never be made these days is Blazing Saddles. You know, and they talked about it. You know, Richard Pryor, one of the main writers, Cleavon Little being the star of the movie, Gene Wilder. But Mel Brooks talked about it, you know. And the absurdity, the humor lies in the absurdity of all that. Of every joke, you got, you know. If you can laugh at that absurdity, then you disarm that kind of mentality. But you couldn't have it because, obviously, you're not going to... No one in Hollywood would greenlight that movie. I'm shocked that you're even still allowed to watch that movie. That they haven't pulled it from every... gone door to door. Do you have a DVD or VHS copy of it? We need that now. I mean, I'm shocked that that hasn't happened. That it still survives on. But again, the comedy lies in the absurdity and the silliness and the absurdity over and over again. And if we can't get that through our brains, then we're probably not laughing a lot.
It was on over the weekend. I only watched like 3 minutes of it.
Mm.
And it was after Cleavon Little, who's the sheriff,
yeah,
you know, tried to talk to the people of the town and they, you know, called him the N-word.
Yeah.
Everything else, and you know, and then it just goes from that scene to there he is in the sheriff's office with Gene Wilder, you know, saying to him in a very soft voice, "What did you expect?"
Right,
you know, and he's sitting there like with this staring look into the like, "What did you expect?"
Right,
these are people of the land,
right? Yeah,
you know, morons.
Yeah, yeah.
And then immediately it goes to Mongo.
Yeah.
Alex Karras is
gone, oh man,
you know, to Mongo, and I'm just and I watch, you know, the telegram for Mongo, candygram for Mongo.
Yeah,
it's like it's hilarious. I mean, it's great.
It's just silly.
It's great. It's great stuff, and it shows the really. I mean, that or it showed the it showed the absurdity of racism.
Well, that's it.
Is what it clearly showed.
You know, and if you didn't get that, then you didn't understand what the movie was about.
Yeah.
You know,
probably people, audiences, the quicksand, you know, when the quicksand, I mean, could you imagine?
Yeah,
there'd be riots.
There'd
be riots over the quicksand.
Yeah. Never going to happen
today.
Right. Yeah. Never going to happen.
866-90 Red Eye.
This morning's USDA Farm Report is brought to you by Howe's Products. Tested, trusted, guaranteed since 1920.
Not many drought coverage areas by commodity production are reporting increasing drought. USDA meteorologist Brad Ripiet says one commodity seeing more drought coverage is winter wheat.
The current drought coverage for the U.S. winter wheat production area is 28%. That is up from 18% at the beginning of April and also up from a recent minimum of just 12% back in March of 2024. And that does reflect some of the trouble spots that we see across eastern Colorado, Kansas, and into parts of Oklahoma and Texas just happening to overlap with some of our key winter wheat production areas.
Mostly positive indicators are observed for spring planted crops and commodities in drought. One exception, though.
As we move to the north, a few issues in some of our spring wheat and other northern crop production areas. 27% of the U.S. spring wheat production area in drought at the end of April, up slightly from 25% in early April.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This report brought to you by Cenex Fuels and Lubes.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, now the scuttlebutt is the Biden administration wants Biden out there doing shorter speeches. He's been out there too much over the last couple of weeks.
Oh.
It's had the opposite effect. The more people hear from him, the more they reject him. We'll have that story coming up because it was actually on MSNBC where they were discussing it. This interesting new government data shows that wind power, that the generation from wind power fell in 2023 despite the addition of new capacity. I love this one. A fact that energy sector experts said demonstrate its inherent flaw. It's where the wind's blowing. Wind generation fell by about 2.1% in 2023 relative to 2022, despite 6 gigawatts of wind power capacity that was added and came online last year, according to data published Tuesday by the U.S. Energy Information Administration. That's the Energy Department. The wind power output dropped despite new capacity coming online and the ability of government subsidies that came from the infrastructure project and more.
If only there was a way to control the wind.
You can't.
Maybe this administration, maybe the president could issue an executive order for it to be more windy.
Mandate wind. The Democrats' new legislation named Break Wind.
Yes. Break Big Wind.
Break Big Wind.
Yes. Yes. Let's get that done. Make that a campaign promise, please.
Open 1-866-90-RED-EYE, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. And I'm just telling you, Eric, just reading this here. And this is on the story of the Energy Department reporting that wind power electricity went down. What we produced last year went down, even though we added more capacity online. But I just... This is the same thing I'm getting so what do you think about the unlawful protests on campus? Well, we always defend freedom of speech. And Eric, you and I have said that's like saying, so what do you have to say about the guy who robbed the bank? Well, we want to make sure that we want people to understand that you can walk into a bank and legally withdraw from your checking account. Thank you. That's my opinion. Well, you're not addressing what the problem is. Yes, we are. We're saying people have a right to banking, so they have a right to rob. No, that's a different case. You're confusing me. That's the point.
We're getting a lot of Captain Obvious moments.
Yeah, actually, that's what this administration, that's how they answer questions.
Yeah.
Captain Obvious.
Yeah. Well, you know.
So what do you think about the fact that the federal government and your department, here it is, email, showing that you censored what was going on with the lab leak, and here clearly are your emails. What do you have to say? Well, yes, those are emails, and we are against censoring, and we've always been against censoring, and so we hope not to censor. But the emails say that you censor. Not familiar with those emails at all. And again, we are against censoring. But it shows that you censored. Now Trump censored.
Yeah. Also, Trump is Hitler.
Trump is Hitler. But
yeah.
But it was this one here on wind power. Relying on wind power to meet your peak electricity demands is gambling with the grid, said Isaac Orr, policy fellow at the Center of American Experiment, who specializes in power grid related analysis. Will the wind blow? or won't it blow? This should be a moment where policymakers step back and consider the wisdom of heavily subsidizing intermittent generators and punishing reliable coal and gas plants with horrible regulations.
Wow. And yet we keep doing it. And yet we keep doing it over and over, spending more money on it to get less results because you can't control the wind. There's no, it's so easy for everybody to see. Electricity rates have gone up. Everybody's paying more. Yet, we still vote for this kind of nonsense.
And we all know what's going on. I mean, this is another guy from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, Paige Labermont, said, this isn't subsidies per kilowatt hour of generation. Mm. It's raw subsidies. If it were per kilowatt hour of generation, the numbers would be even more extreme. Mm. Page said, a research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. This is a massive amount of money. It's enough to dramatically alter energy investment decisions for the worse. We're much more heavily subsidizing the sources that don't provide a significant portion of our electricity than those who do. Policy that just focuses on installed capacity rather than the I can't believe I'm reading this. This is like this is like
it really is.
This is like the four we're involved in the Forrest Gump elementary school trying to educate liberals to basic simple concepts that I knew in elementary school. Policy that focuses on installed capacity rather than the reliability of that capacity fails to understand the real needs of the electrical grid, which I guess to put in a more blunt language, if you're an idiot, you're always going to be an idiot. This recent disparity illustrates that more installed wind capacity does not necessarily correlate with more wind power production.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much wind capacity you add to the grid, if the wind isn't blowing at peak demand time, that capacity goes to waste. Wow. Wind power's performance was especially lackluster in the upper Midwest. Texas saw more wind generation in 2023 than in 2022. But wind generation in the first half of 2023 was about 14% lower than it was through the first 6 months of 2022. But generation was higher towards the end of 2023 than it was during the same period of 2024. We then came to the point of where it was 2.7% less wind power generated, but 6 gigawatts more of capacity.
Yeah.
So capacity means, by the way, does capacity mean capacity if it isn't capacity when needed?
Yeah, capacity is always capacity, but it doesn't matter if we fulfill that capacity.
Well, I would think
which is the reason you should be expanding the capacity. You got the capacity for more if there were only more. Which is why we believe that they should mandate that the wind increase.
Well, yes, but I would think that you would have to, in order to, if capacity, I would argue, is not capacity unless it's capacity that can be used when you need it.
Well, it's empty capacity, but it's, yeah, it's still capacity.
Empty capacity.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, what do you have the capacity to hold? If there's an empty building, does it have the capacity to hold 100 people? Yeah. If there's 100 people in it or not in it.
Well, but a building has the capacity of holding 100 people, but what if it only had that capacity to hold 100 people 6 months a year.
Well, what if, here's the thing. What if we just poured money into it?
What if we just move on to another topic?
What if we just poured government money into it?
That's right. If you poured more government money into it, they could build more floors.
They don't care about the results. They don't care about the results. Once you start the spending, we saw this with ethanol. We're still seeing it with ethanol. Once you start the spending in this way, you're going to keep that spending going. You've created an all-new industry that produces less. That is not reliable. And it doesn't matter. You've got corporations, because they've got their hand out too, that are willing to jump on board and help you promote it. And the fact of the matter is that at some point, something has to give. We have to decide, no, this is stupid.
All right, so we've got a great audio cut coming up here because it was 2 weeks ago today, I believe, that the Trump trial started.
Yeah, and we're entering
week three.
Week four? Yeah, week four now. If you include the, you know, jury selection.
Oh, jury selection. Okay.
So this is the beginning of week four.
All right. So we're week four into it. Now, early on, the Biden campaign was out there saying, look at Biden. He's all over campaigning and Trump isn't campaigning because he's in court facing felony charges.
Yeah.
We're out campaigning. He's not campaigning. Yeah. And so they were really big. So they were putting Biden everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it was every single day.
Oh, man, it was bad.
Was a disaster.
It was bad.
And the polling showed it. And then Trump decided to come out after or during, you know, in intermission and make statements, and all the media was there.
Mm.
And then he started last week. Remember, he went to the, had a day off in, what was it, Wisconsin he did?
Yeah.
A couple of places that he actually went out and did campaigning. He's been campaigning on the weekends. And it's like, oh, okay, he's still out there every day, and you see him on social media. Well, after a few weeks of doing this, we said last week, this has been a disaster. You know, they need to pull him back.
Mm.
This isn't working. Putting Biden out there is a disaster every day. That's what NBC is reporting. And this was on CNBC that they reported it.
We have news this morning from NBC News that the campaign is looking to shorten its speeches. Biden's general election strategy is less is more. The president's aides are seeking to tighten his pitch to voters with shorter, crisper speeches. To be honest with you, Quentin, I think that's a very smart idea. I think
for everyone.
I appreciate that approach because it is a way for the president to sort of hit with clarity, stick his points and move on and not get lost and sidetracked. Is give us a little bit more of the scene setting around the thinking there and trying to reimagine the campaign going forward with what you just said and this idea now of the president tighten his grip on his speeches.
Look, our campaign believes in quality over quantity. We believe that these touches, these smaller things that are getting directly to the point about what is going on in the stakes of this election are going to be easier for voters to tap into and sort of also go out and say and talk to their friends and family about what's at stake.
So is that accurate?
No.
Are they doing this because they believe that they can get quality over quantity?
No.
That Biden is just presenting too much that the American public can't handle?
No. They're doing it because Joe Biden is a liability to Joe Biden.
Because he can't complete a sentence, that's why. We all know it. Everybody know. I love that was Michael Steele, by the way, former head of the RNC.
Yeah.
My God. Did he ever believe anything?
Nope.
Did he ever? Because you don't change. Tell you right now, very few people change. You saw people, for example, you've seen people in their 30s, for example, late 20s, early 30s change, Democrats to Republicans. You've seen that. Well, maybe not Democrats to Republicans, but Democrats recognizing, for example, the censoring.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the Barry Weiss and Michael Schellenbergers and Matt Taibbi's. Once they got in and saw what the Democratic Party was doing in the Biden administration, attempting to censor what was going on, that scared the hell out of them.
Yeah.
They realized, yeah, they went, my God, this really is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you see people like Jonathan Turley, you see Dershowitz, you see others out there that recognize it, or Roy Teixeira, that we brought up earlier, who's a Democrat. He's still a Democrat, but he looks and he understands the problems that the party has. But as we saw, and if you've been listening the last 2 to 3 weeks to us, we've been saying this. We said it's a disaster with Biden on every day, and they're being very arrogant about it. We're out and Trump isn't. We're out everywhere, and we're talking, and we're and it's like he doesn't take any questions. Yeah. It's simply the fact that we got to cut his speeches down from 5 minutes to a minute.
Yep. Yep. And it is a, you know, this is the problem that they're, I think they're always going to have. Look, 1 minute is a problem. So you're going to cut his speeches down. He will still go off script.
They'll have artificial intelligence. They'll have Biden out there. He'll start speaking. Artificial intelligence will pick it up, create the voice, and throw it back at you.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is he's still going to be defiant. You're going to tell him he has to shorten his speeches?
Yeah.
Why? So many great things are happening. He's got the energy of a 25-year-old. Why?
Apparently, that's a lie.
Hmm?
Apparently, he doesn't have the energy of a 25-year-old.
Okay.
Is anyone going to call me on that lie? That if I'm lying?
Yeah, I don't know.
Does anybody think I'm lying out there when they say Biden? When they say Biden has the energy of a 25-year-old and we call them a liar, are we lying?
Well, I mean, tell me why you would logistically. You're campaigning for re-election.
Let's do less campaigning.
Let's do less. That's always been the case, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You just wonder what's going to happen over the next 5 years. I was reading this story that a school in upstate New York, Wells College, closing its doors this spring after seeing its graduating class of 2024, cross the podium into their future due to unstable revenue. We have a fiduciary responsibility to the institution. We have determined, after a thorough review, that the college does not have adequate financial resources to continue.
Yeah.
Many small colleges like Wells have faced enormous financial challenges. These challenges have been exacerbated by the global pandemic, a shrinking pool of undergraduate students nationwide, inflationary pressures, and overall negative sentiment towards higher education.
Oh, yep. There you go. Yep.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
John brings his skewed sense of humor. Jeff brings tips to cut strokes off your next round. Together, it's those weekend golf guys.
They'll pay a lot of money to PXG and Titleist and Callaway and on and on and on. Right? How many yards do you think you're going to pick up with that extra driver? I think I can get an extra 5 to 10. What if I give you 15 to 20? You pay me more.
Jeff Smith teaches on the sliding scale.
Those Weekend Golf Guys, the podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.